Okay, there we go. John 8. I'm going to read this, and then I'll talk about what it is I want to talk about today. But let's start with this reading. John 8, I'm going to pick up in verse 31, and you can follow there with me. John 8, 31. So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed him, "If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." They answered him, "We are offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you say you will become free?" And Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The son remains forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you are offspring of Abraham, yet you seek to kill me because my word finds no place in you. I speak of what I have seen with my father, and you do what you have heard from your father." I read not too long ago about, I read a quote that then I did a little digging. I was like, who is that? And I read a little bit about the person who said it. And in 1963, there was a guy named William Hayes who was released after a bunch of years in prison. And when the guards opened the gates, handed him his papers and his effects, and told him he was free to go, he just kind of froze in place. After however long he had been in prison, decades, I think, freedom frightened him. And he is quoted as having said, "I don't know what to do out there." He was legally free. But emotionally, he was still imprisoned. We all sort of have that feeling in a way. We want freedom. We recognize the value of freedom. But often when it comes down to it, we don't know how to live in it. We fear losing control. Maybe we fear the world changing around us. Maybe we are paralyzed with indecision. And in that fear, sometimes we trade the freedom, the inner freedom, the spiritual freedom that Jesus is offering for the illusion of safety, control, purpose. You know, just like it was silly for William Hayes really to stand there and not go out into his freedom, we recognize that feels weird. We do that type of thing all the time. We trade what is freedom, what is liberty, for that which feels comfortable, feels familiar, feels safe. It's a scary picture, that example. A man standing at a gate, being told he's free to go, and being afraid to like actually walk out and to go. Our country is called, oftentimes, the land of the free. We even have songs and slogans oriented around that. Yet freedom feels fragile, doesn't it? We scroll the news, our anxiety rises. We debate about what's going on. We have opinions about what we wish would happen, and we divide and we worry. And maybe deep down, somewhere inside of us, we're standing at sort of a proverbial gate, like William Hayes was. Maybe we're legally free right now. Maybe we're politically free right now, but spiritually we're unsure how to live, where to go. And that's where John 8 meets us. Today, I want to talk about what it is to be truly in the land of the free. It's a, you know, if you're like me, if, big if here, maybe you can relate to this even if you're not. If you're like me, you try your best to sort of stay above the fray, right? You try to like stay out of the news. You try to stay away from the things that I can't really control, that feel weighty, that maybe make us anxious, because there's a lot of that going on. No matter how hard you have tried lately, you've probably been aware of different things going on in the world that you have feelings about one way or another. And doesn't it feel like everybody's got an opinion right now? Doesn't it feel like in this present moment, we're all debating what it is to be free? What does it mean to live in the land of the free? What does it mean to have a country that celebrates liberty? What does that look like in our leaders, our local officials, and in our communities? And we all have strong opinions. And in a way, we're all yelling at each other, "You're free." And yet we're staring at each other, each behind our own gate, afraid to step into what is actual freedom. We all have political opinions. We all have political fears. We all have ideologies that we wish our nation reflected, that we feel our nation should reflect. And we disagree on what some of that may mean. But here we are in this room, not as Americans, but as Christians. And Jesus is trying to tell us about freedom. Jesus is trying to describe to us the reality of the land of the free. What does that look like? What does that feel like? How should we think about it when when headlines stir fear, when our elected leaders concern us, when conversations are dividing, when hearts are looking for something else? I think we're experiencing liberty, but not often peace. Is that what Jesus is talking about in John chapter 8? Is he describing a freedom or a liberty without peace? To Jesus, it seems like the two go hand in hand. To experience the freedom of God is to know peace. Unconditional, not circumstantial, stable peace. Isn't that the irony, though? Like, as Americans, we celebrate freedom, we wave our flags, we talk about the land of the free, we talk about having liberties, and yet we are more scared, more outraged, and more out of control than it feels like in my lifetime as a 35-year-old we've ever been. What's going on? In part, not to oversimplify or to diminish anyone's concerns, but in part, we've lost sight of real liberty. As Christians in this room, if anybody's going to remain sober, stable, steadfast, unconcerned, it should be us. Not because these things aren't real, not because they don't affect us and our family and our friends, but because ultimately we read scriptures like John 8. And we have an anchor. We have a perspective that is outside of elected officials, that is outside of governmental decrees and amendments and doctrines and executive orders. And so the deeper question today is, do Jesus' words here, because I think we can all see what he's saying, do they still apply? Do we actually believe that they still apply in our lives in this context 2,000 years later on the other side of the planet? Because I don't think anyone reads these words like in John 8 and elsewhere and says that what Jesus is offering is anything but freedom and liberty. There's no way to slice this as otherwise and be sincere and genuine in your assessment. So really what we're asking when we look at this is not what is Jesus talking about, but does Jesus know what he's talking about? Think about the context which, there's a bird in here. Think about the context to which Jesus is delivering these words. In fact, in this conversation that we read, some of the response Jesus gets alludes to the context politically that they're in, the climate that they're in. Jesus is a Jewish man, often speaking to Jewish people. And in this context, what does it say in verse 31? He is, in fact, speaking to Jews. And what's the political reality for Jews, the governmental reality for Jews, as Jesus is saying these words? They are not free. They do not have the liberties of a Jewish nation like God intended for them to have in their history. They are under Roman occupation. They have what they would describe as an oppressor. You know what? I imagine there was a lot of Jews that would use this language. The Romans are an illegal government. We are sovereign. They have no right to rule over us. And yet, here they were, paying Roman taxes, living under Roman decrees. But so is what Jesus is saying inapplicable now? And was it inapplicable then? I want us to understand today that this message obviously is related to politics, in so much as we have anxieties, we have concerns, whether you like the things happening, whether you dislike the things happening, whether you're directly affected positively or negatively, people are worried. Or, if you're not worried, you're worked up. Maybe you're rooting for what's going on. But either way, what Jesus has to say to us today is about what real freedom is, what real liberty is, and how it applies to our lives, and how, by implication, by application, we should not be worked up. We should not be divided. And ultimately, we should not even really care. And I'll define that as we go along. But we should not really care, as in invest our hopes and our futures in what is going on around us politically, culturally. And so this lesson is meant to describe or define for us freedom. But it's also meant to explore what it means for those of us who fear, particularly those of us who are feeling anxious, our freedoms being removed or lost. In John chapter 8, just stay here for a second, the crowd thinks Jesus means one thing, when in reality he means another. Did you notice that? When Jesus is talking to them, he's talking to them about the truth and how the truth will set them free, verse 32. And what's their response to that in verse 33? What are you talking about, Jesus? We have never been enslaved, which just is ridiculous. Literally, the history of the Israelites is a history that began and ended in their day with slavery. They were slaves in Egypt, and then they became slaves of different civilizations kind of along the way to the day that they are living under Roman occupation. But Jesus doesn't really quibble with this like revisionist history. He actually doesn't even address it. Look in verse 34. What does he really want to get at? Despite that being untrue, and Jesus' words meeting them in a place that should have been understood even in Jerusalem, he's actually communicating to them that he's not talking about government of earth. He's not talking about policies, elected officials. What he is talking about is sin. Verse 34. Have the Israelites been enslaved to sin? just as we all have. They should know, in fact, better than most, but that's the reality. Sin enslaves through fear. Sin enslaves through pride, through resentment, through false hope. We can be politically free. The Jews weren't, but we could be, and yet spiritually enslaved. Or we could be politically oppressed and spiritually free. They are not directly linked. One does not have to be true if the other is true. And what Jesus is identifying is that the truth has the ability to set you free, even in a worldly context where you are not enjoying the liberties that you hoped, wished, preferred to enjoy. I think that's really important for us to have faith in. Our government could stop promoting being a land of the free. I'm not saying it will, but if it did, let's just imagine. If this country stopped giving us all the liberties we've enjoyed for 200 years and fundamentally shifted, could we still be free? The kind of freedom Jesus is talking about is designed to deliver anyone from such a context. The path to freedom is in verse 36. If the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. Freedom's not found in self-determination. For anyone inclined to think and move that way, that's just not the truth. That's not the truth that sets you free. The truth that sets you free is that if the Son intends to free you, you will be freed. It's not secured by force, but by faith. There is no rebellion, there is no fight that you can take up for freedom, not from sin. If the Son intends for you to be free, and you have faith in that Son doing that, then you can be free. And it's not granted by governments. It's granted by grace. I think if we understand the nature of freedom in these terms, we will begin to find that our joy, our contentment, our peace, our perspective, our hope, all of these things will slowly become more and more detached from our governments, from executive orders, from amendments and constitutional rights, and become more and more tied to words like the words in John 8. More and more tied to the faith of the Son, from the Son, by the Son. One of the texts I want us to focus on as we progress here is John 18. John 18. I'm going to move a little more quickly through some of these references here. I tried to keep my references to a minimum. So we're going to be in John 18, and then in a minute we'll be in Philippians 3. We'll look at those briefly. But right now, John 18, I want to look at one particular verse here that I think just kind of distills the point, and that is verse 36, where Jesus says this, John 18, 36, "My kingdom," again, governmental language, right, authoritative language, "is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting, that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from this world." Jesus refused to let his mission be co-opted by political movements. I think that has a lot of application for us in life. We cannot pretend, nor should we idealize this notion that the U.S. Constitution, America, is Christianity. Jesus didn't let people in his day make any association with any political movement to what he was trying to accomplish. They were not one in the same. In fact, in John 8, what did Jesus say about that? Not only is he saying, my kingdom is not of this world, but when they said, we haven't been enslaved to anyone, he said, look, I'm dealing with sin. He's not writing policy. Not to be enacted by governments, but be enacted by faith. Again, Jesus refused to let his mission be co-opted by political movements. Also, he came not to conquer nations. Jesus doesn't have a scope like that. His scope is more personal and individual. What did he come to conquer? Hearts, ideas, minds. Those are the things that produce faith. Institutions do not produce faith. Monoliths don't produce faith. The gospel entering into the hearts and minds of people produces faith. And his throne stands above every party, every empire, and every constitution. Now, don't mishear what I'm saying. I'm not trying to say that those things should be in service to Christianity, but what I'm saying is God's sovereignty stretches above and beyond any governmental order. And in that way, his kingdom's not of the world. The peace of a heavenly citizen is emphasized in Philippians 3. I mentioned we would turn there briefly if you want to go ahead and get there. Philippians chapter 3, verse 20. But our citizenship is in heaven, and from it we await a Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ, who will transform our lowly body to be like his glorious body by the power that enables him even to subject all things to himself. Our citizenship is in heaven. Number one. What does it look like when the truth sets me free and I have faith in the Son who has set me free? Well, fundamentally, my citizenship is transferred from the bondage of sin. It's transferred from my ideas of self. It's transferred from any political association I may have. And it's put in heavenly places where God's kingdom is not of the world. You know, if someone asks you, who are you? We might be inclined to say, I'm Josh. I'm 35. I'm of the United States. I'm an American. I'm from Alabama. Those are things that I might identify myself with. But as a believer, the truth is, the only thing that really is the identifying mark of me that matters is that I am a Christian. I am a believer in the Son who sets me free. I am a citizen of heaven. The reason I wanted to point this out is twofold. There's truth to it, of course. But mainly I wanted to point this out because of some of the applications that I think come from this. If our allegiance is to a heavenly kingdom and to Christ, if that's fair to say that it should be that way, and I believe it is, then we can love our country without idolizing it, without putting our hope in it, without having it be our future that's invested in it. We can engage in politics without fear. Because as much as we may like an idea or want to see something happen, at the end of the day, the kingdom is not of this world. My citizenship's in heaven. And that will allow us as Christians to operate with differing opinions and not divide. I think I have a lot of good ideas about how things should be. You probably think that too. And what happens when my good ideas and your ideas are good ideas are not the same good ideas? Well, okay. Our kingdom's not of this world. At the end of the day, it's not something we need to be divided about. It's not something that we have to contend about because ultimately, it's not really going to matter. When Christ is king in our hearts and in our minds, patriotism is merely gratitude. Not idolatry. We can be thankful for the things that we enjoy. We can be thankful for where we've grown up and the things that are made available to us without idolizing them. convictions, political, governmental, cultural, all become compassion, not hostility. When I hear out your opinions about how things should go, I don't have to get worked up about it, because ultimately I know that you believe and I believe our citizenship is in heaven. And it's an act of compassion to hear you out. We can agree to disagree. But ultimately, all of this sort of falls short of where I want to land with this lesson. I hope those are some good truths, some good perspectives for you. But I want to turn to John 13 to sort of bring home the big point here in terms of what we can be pursuing with all of this. John 13, two verses. John 13, verse 34. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. Should we have a divided church? Should we have the left-leaning church, the right-leaning church, the centrist church, the conservative church, or the liberal church, the progressive church? Our time, in our day and age right now, we want to divide over these things. We all think we have the right ideas and the good ideas about how this or that should go. And what's easy to do with that is assume then that someone's ideas other than our own are coming from a place that is not as informed as our place, or maybe is not coming from the motivation that I have. Maybe my motivation for my ideas is because I want the best for people, and so if someone has a different set of ideas, that must mean that they don't want the best for people, right? What should Christians want? We should want to love one another. If I can keep that in mind, if I can understand that as part of the faith, then as we engage with each other on things that matter in this life to some measure, politics, culture, opinions on this or that, my frame of mind is a fundamentally different frame of mind. We're engaging, we're listening because we love each other. But in our time, believers are often divided, not over doctrine, but over politics, personalities, and perspectives. Is that something God wants? I think we all know the answer to that. The gospel frees us from fear of being on the wrong side of things. And what I mean by that is it calls us to be on Jesus' side. You don't have to have the correct opinion on economic policies. You're free from that. You don't have to have the right opinion on immigration. You're free from that. You don't have to have the right opinion on whatever, who the right candidate is. You're free from that. I'm saying that not to say you can't exercise your liberty in this country to have an opinion, but what I'm saying is you don't have to get it right. You don't have to feel the stress of knowing all the ins and outs and making sure that you're doing the right thing, because your future doesn't depend on it. Your hope is not invested solely in that. The love that you have for the people around you is not dependent on them sharing the same viewpoint as you. When the world sees the church disagree with grace, they see a freedom the world, when the world sees a church agree with grace, they see a freedom the world cannot produce. If we as Christians are listening to Jesus' words, the words of John 8, the truth will set you free. And we hear that and we read John 13. That we should love one another, and the world looks at us and actually sees that, they're going to see something that the government has not produced for them. that our culture just hasn't produced for them. And we can be a witness that way. We can give testimony that way. So, in practice, what does this mean for Christians? Well, functionally, together, this means listening without labeling. Pray, doing something like praying more than you post. Remember that Jesus' cross unites the world divides. Has it ever been more obvious than right now that the mechanisms, the gears of this world are not holy? Sometimes it's harder to see. Things are going good, everybody's got nice decorum, and it feels a little less clear. But when push comes to shove and the climate's like what we're living through right now, it becomes more apparent that the world is not aiming for these ideals. Everything's a power grab. Everything's self-oriented, self-motivated, self-intended. The world is not trying to love you or each other. If we circle back to John chapter 8 for the end here, look again at verse 36. This is where we'll wrap up. Jesus says this, "So if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed." At the center of the good news is the greatest paradox of all. The only truly free man chose to die as a slave. On the cross, Jesus took the chains of sin, fear, pride, and self so that we could walk in the freedom of forgiven children. It's as if Jesus was on the outside of the prison looking in, looking at someone like who we described earlier, and saying, "I'll go in if you let him out." Imagine this situation. Everybody's in prison, and there's only one person out of prison. And Jesus says, "I'll go in if you can let all of them out." In a way, that's the gospel, right? The only free man became a slave, became imprisoned, so that the rest of us would not have to live in prison. True freedom, and this is really important because we're Americans in this room and we have ideas about what freedom is. I know because I grew up in America. I've heard it my whole life. True freedom is not the right to do as you please. That is not freedom. That's not real liberty. True freedom is the power to live as you are made to live. And that power only comes from Jesus, who sets us free. Jesus helps us be aligned with the image that God made us in. We have ideas about freedom and liberty. We have opinions about how that should go, what that should look like, what that should mean I get to do. And where has that led us? Right into slavery. Remember, freedom is not fragile if it's founded in Jesus. So resist. Resist the temptation to make earthly kingdoms, governmental policies, political candidates, your ultimate hope. Thank you guys for listening today. I hope this was helpful for you. I debated even presenting this lesson because I don't want to be perceived as political. I hope that felt pretty apolitical. But I do feel it's relevant. And so hopefully you felt that as well, just thinking through very abstractly just some of the feelings that you may have had recently with things going on in the world. I hope it's a good reminder to reflect on the teachings of Jesus and just consider, again, chiefly what it is that we're hoping in and aiming for. So again, thank you guys for listening today. I'm going to lead us in one last song.